And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
With just a few days left before the 2006 midterm elections, it all comes down to which side is going to walk away with the House and which walks away with the Senate. There's a lot at stake, and today we get two perspectives on the U.S. elections from two environmental writers and advocates who cut on through to the other side. That's all coming up when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News. Due to the adult content of the program you are about to hear, listener attention is advised.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Election 2006 is now just a few days away. That the war in Iraq is the monster in the closet for the Bush administration, while the Democrats waffle and dodge the missteps of their self-anointed leaders. As would be expected, the outcome is a slam dunk for the Democrats, or so some would have us believe, while a close call is the safe bet for those who want to retain their political prognosticator certificates, while fears of yet another stolen election sully the reputation of the world's champion for democracy and the right of a people to decide in fair elections the will of the people. And so who will win? One of my massive concerns is that a true and honest dialogue about the future of nature and our environment is never discussed with any acumen or depth in these elections. This at a time when resource wars promise to further complicate international relations, when global warming threatens to overturn the global economy, when the world's grandest creatures loom perilously close to extinction, and people witness the lands of their ancestors, artists, and spirit torn and blasted away from the communities that worship within them. And yet, in dialogues and debates of the aspiring kings and princesses of our future, tongues go numb and minds succumb to the wanton ploys of power. So today we offer two voices that leap forth in forthright candor to talk about the earth and power and politics and people. Following the news, we take a step back to 2004, days before the election, to hear the prognostications of one who has built a career as a global futurist. We hear once again the thoughts of legendary advocate, author, and iconoclast, Dr. Paul Ehrlich, as he shares his thoughts on the significance of the outcome of the 2004 presidential election, just days before it happened. Then, in segments 2 and 3, we hear another voice that speaks from a place of great passion against the plunder of the paradise of the heart and hills, which he intermixes in a soulful sense of home. Robert Nanenga, writer, activist, speaks to us from San Diego about the failure of a Federalist dream. We take a refreshing step inside the wildness of reason following the news. So now, the news. Large species of coral are disappearing from around the U.S. Virgin Islands, Jamaica, and throughout the Caribbean, according to a leading researcher. Larger species are being replaced by smaller species, which do not offer protection for fish, lobster, and other sea life that live with and amongst the large coral colonies. Abnormally warm weather, along with pollution and overfishing, is killing the coral, according to Peter Edmonds, biology professor at California State University, Northridge. Larger coral is a critical part of a complex ecosystem upon which marine life depends and grows and reproduces best when the temperature is around 81.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Seas have now reached 85.3 degrees, temperatures at which coral can be damaged if waters do not cool after only a few weeks. Such conditions could lead to the total transformation of the Caribbean underwater seascape within 50 years. Great Britain let loose with a report which claims that global warming is destined to have enormous economic consequences within this century, consuming up to 20% of the global domestic annual product, if actions are not initiated immediately to turn the warming tides. British Treasury Chief Gordon Brown commissioned the report which called for bold and decisive action to cut carbon dioxide emissions and stem the worst of the temperature rise. Prime Minister Blair called the report the most important document on the future that he had read since becoming Prime Minister. Treasury Chief Brown has hired Al Gore to consult as a change agent, as he has so successfully brought awareness of the global warming crisis which looms in the planet's future through his years of work and his recent movie, An Inconvenient Truth. Meanwhile, in Washington, two federal agencies are investigating whether the Bush administration assisted in blocking government scientists from speaking freely about global warming and bringing about the censure of the research. This, according to Senator Frank Lautenberg, Democrat of New Jersey, who said he was informed that the Inspectors General of the Commerce Department and NASA had begun a coordinated and sweeping investigation of the Bush administration's censorship and suppression of federal research into global warming. Administration spokeswoman Kristen Helmer said Wednesday that, on the contrary, we have in place the most transparent system of science reporting, and claims that the administration interfered with scientists are false. Claims of interference have been intensified recently with a report that a public affairs officer, George Deutsch, a political appointee, changed or filtered information on global warming and the Big Bang. The investigations will seek written corroboration to support or disprove Lautenberg's claims. And finally, scientists once again have discovered something that apparently was totally unknown until they discovered it. Elephants provided with giant mirrors and marked with huge white X's on their heads have the capacity to recognize themselves in the mirror and even touch the giant X with their trunks while looking into the mirror, thus proving that the animals have the ability for self-recognition. This raises elephantine questions about animal awareness, intelligence, feelings, compassions for other elephants, which scientists will now set out to discover. Meanwhile, this morning, my bird Smokey realized that when I hold her to my chest and rub her head, I'm being nice, not mean. And now, she suddenly welcomes such friendly hugs and kisses without complaint. And that's the news. 2 years ago, the Wild Side News brought you a series of guests who shared their thoughts on the significance to the Earth and our future of Election 2004. We are all now living with that outcome. Some people claim that this ever-changing world is just too unpredictable to reason what is to come. We bring you now the thoughts of Dr. Paul Ehrlich, just days before the 2004 election between John Kerry and George Bush.
Paul Ehrlich opens our show. Paul Ehrlich is legendary as a futurist, and with his wife Anne have penned their newest book about our future, One with Nineveh, Politics, Consumption, and the Human Future. Paul, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Nice to be here. I'm standing in line waiting for a typhoid shot. How are you?
Sounds like fun. We're all having such fun these days.
I'm like all my colleagues, I'm desperately disturbed. I don't know a single person, Democrat or Republican, who doesn't think that the Bush administration is the worst and most dangerous in the history of the United States. There may have been more crooks in a Tyler administration, but he couldn't blow up the world. And I think that the thing that concerns me is my grandchildren. I have them living here, Washington, D.C., and, Bush has created this huge recruiting poster for terrorists in Iraq and is not defending our homeland against the possibility of nuclear weapons smuggled in, against the huge possibility of future epidemics. We've just seen the total incompetence of our government in even supplying us with flu vaccines. And, of course, is busily destroying the environment and wrecking our civil rights. It is the most frightening election in my unfortunately long life. And I must say the things you just said, I agree with wholeheartedly. And as I say, so do all of my friends. I left the Republican Party when Bush was nominated. My friend Russ Train, who was Nixon's head of the EPA, is going to vote for Kerry. Pete McCloskey, my friend, the Republican congressman from this district some years ago, got out an op-ed saying he was going to vote for Kerry. No one who loves their grandchildren, thinks anything about future generations, and wants to have a decent life could possibly think of voting for this bunch of liars. It's incredible to me that virtually no member of this administration, of the Bush administration, has ever served in the U.S. military, and yet they keep waving their flags while a genuine hero, someone who had the guts, and I know John Kerry reasonably well, he had the guts not only to go to Vietnam and get himself wounded, but then when he came back, had the guts to tell the country it was the wrong war. And somehow, the Republican spin doctors have turned it all around. It's a dramatically awful situation. You want to know what I really think?
Well, actually, I'm gonna let you just free associate, Paul, because you've really spent your entire life and know more about this than I could ever hope to know. I'd like you to share your thoughts about our future, the Earth in particular, the environment, and how that relates to this election. And yes, please be free to share whatever you have. About 7 minutes here to go.
I think all of these things are basically tied together. In other words, one question Americans have to ask themselves is, why are we in Iraq? Those of us who were in the know there was no reason to invade Iraq before the invasion and tried to stop it. Gretchen Daly, the famous ecologist, said, do you really suppose we'd be invading Iraq if its main export were broccoli? In other words, the reason we're in Iraq is because we're driving so many SUVs and are so dependent on petroleum. And yet every sensible scientist and virtually every economist I know think we should be taxing petroleum more heavily and getting off it, because of course that's why the oceans are rising, that's why the glaciers are melting, that's why we may have a catastrophic failure of agriculture, because we're pushing the climatic system hard and it's likely to change in ways that we don't like at all. So, you know, American tanks driving around trying to keep control of oil is just exactly the wrong thing. We have American boys dying to keep the Hummers rolling temporarily. And of course, I should say boys and girls, and of course, many thousands of Iraqis also having their lives destroyed. Now, nobody misses Saddam Hussein. At the same time, there is no reason to believe that he, even if he had had weapons of mass destruction, that he, like the Russians, couldn't have been deterred. So, the whole Iraq war is basically an environmental war. It's an attempt to get resources we shouldn't be using, and that is Bush's super major mistake. The second one, of course, is describing us as basically anti-Muslim in his crusade technology. He's got a bunch of people who think we ought to regenerate the crusades of the distant past in order to try and make the world an American empire. That's a very stupid thing to do. Even if it were moral, which it isn't, it's something that is going to boomerang on us. We should be helping the poor people of the world. The threat of large epidemics is increased all the time as there are larger and larger numbers of poor people pushing themselves into close contact with the organisms that cause disease. And of course, SARS is an example. The scientific community is worried sick over a bird flu starting up in Asia and getting over here and elsewhere. And yet we are disarming ourselves on the epidemiological front. Something like 90% of the containers that come into the United States are not inspected, and that would be an easy way for somebody to send in a nuclear weapon. Bush is spending billions of dollars on a Star Wars defense, A, that won't work, and B, as everybody knows, it's the last way another nation would send a nuclear weapon at us, because it's the only way we'd know for sure where it came from. So what we've got is a bunch of nutcases in this administration, and I am really frightened of what will happen if we get another 4 years of them. And I'm really concerned, as you probably can tell.
Obviously, and I want to create this forum for particularly people in the environment who somehow their voices, and you're way beyond just the environment, you actually have this incredible breadth of perspective that is a clarion vision for the future. Let's talk about John Kerry, what you think he may be able to bring to this table, because you do know him and you know people who know him. Let's talk about what you think what differences he might be able to forge.
Well, I would hope he would return us to a bipartisan approach on the environment that my unfortunately now dead friend Jack Heintz, who was a Republican senator from Pennsylvania was killed in an airplane accident, and Tim Wirth, the Democratic senator, used to work together very well across the aisle on trying to solve these very nonpartisan environmental problems to keep our life support systems functioning. People don't understand that the environment just isn't another little political issue like Social Security or medical care or unions or something. The environment is the very lives of our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. And Heinz and Wirth worked together very well. And, of course, Heinz's widow, Teresa Heinz, is a great environmentalist and is now married to John Kerry. And Kerry knows all the best people in the country of both parties dealing with environmental issues and also dealing with security issues, by the way, because it's very clear that what Bush has is a bunch of crazy neoconservatives trying to deal with security. I know Condi Rice very well, his security advisor. She's a cold warrior. She's nowhere near as stupid as she appears when she's trying to defend Bush's crazy policies on TV, but she knows nothing about the security issues today. If we were still fighting the Soviet Union, she would be a valuable addition to our security apparatus. As it is now, she's just off, you know, off the planet. So, John Kerry knows the right people. He's got the right instincts. He thinks about things. He isn't driven by a crazed religious fringe, I think he'll make an excellent president.
You know, as we face this election, unfortunately, my concern is the fact that I'm beginning to wonder if it's even going to happen. I'm afraid that it's
Of course, that's another thing. I mean, the attempts to steal the election are already well underway, and that's frightening. Another thing that's frightening is I don't envy John Kerry if he's elected, because the economy's heading towards the dumper, and Iraq, for anybody who's got at least half a wit, I'm not talking about Bush, is descending into an absolutely hideous mess. And all this is going to be dumped on our next president. God knows what Bush will do if he's the next president. I'd hate to see him elected even one time.
You know, what are you hearing in terms of oil prices? Because no one's talking about this, and it's one of my enormous concerns. How are we, and I'm hearing rumors of $70 a barrel oil.
Well,
what are you hearing?
Well, oil could very well increase in price. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Unfortunately, we're not prepared for it. In other words, we should have been, for the last 20 years, trying to transition away from our incredible dependence on oil by gradually increasing taxes on it and that thereby damping down the demand. That is, not having everybody driving an SUV and air conditioning their homes down to 68 in the summer and so on, reducing our dependence on commuting. If that were the case, oil would probably be around where it is now. Gasoline would be around where it is now. But instead of the extra money going into the pockets of the Saudis who use it to pay off the madrassas who are recruiting terrorists, it would be going into the United States Treasury in the form of taxes and could be used to do things like repair our broken educational system, take care of our hideous problems in health care, and so on. So the whole thing, and this is not just both Bush's fault, our country has been on the wrong direction on fossil fuels for at least two or three decades, and oil prices are now going to go up, and the additional money is, again, not going to go to help Americans. It's going to go to pay off people who are, you know, the very rich in Saudi Arabia who are training terrorists.
Well, Paul, I sure wish you'd learn to speak your mind.
If you want to know what I really think, it would be too uncensorable, you know.
Read his book with his wife, Anne, a wonderful book, One with Nineveh. Thank you, Paul Ehrlich, for giving your thoughts on the Wild Side News.
Nice to talk to you. Take care.
You bet. Bye. When we return, we continue with more environmental leaders here on the Wild Side.
Looking for a leader to bring our country home. Reunite the red, white, and blue before it turns to stone. Looking for somebody young enough to take it on. Clean up the corruption and make the country strong.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Go to just about any gathering these days, and people are talking, and politics is on the table. With the midterm elections just a few days off, however, the vast important right and responsibility that, as we've all found out over the last few years, has incredible consequence, is once again groggling along debating the merits of a terrible sense of humor to determining our future. You're about to take a ride into the realms of expanded reason when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News. The pandering punditry we hear each day seems to play within the confines of some imagined boundary, a self-limiting blinder to truth. And yet, all across America, there is a revisionary thinking that breaks new paths to hope and reason. It's often a bit painful to hear, and the words and ideas may at times seem, well, expanding. And in that spirit, we bring you a two-part discussion by writer and activist, entrepreneur and self-styled commentator on culture and the American dream, Robert Nininga, who sat outside his coffee house in Encinitas, California. And
well, we're down to a few days before the 2006 midterm elections, and quite honestly, it's an interesting election period because it seems as if there's a terrific amount of passion. There's people who are saying this actually does matter. I'm hearing that more and more. That people are really feel that this is a serious election. But then it seems as if everybody seems to think that. But it seems as if people are weighing the stakes a little more this time around. I'm sitting on the street here in Encinitas, California, outside of the East Street Cafe, which is a bistro and a coffee house where a lot of people come to think and talk and have some fun. And I'm talking with one of the proprietors here who also happens to be, from my perspective, a grand classic activist, environmental activist, and activist in many different forms. This is Robert Nininga. Bob, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
Well, Bob, here we are. It's just a few days until the election. I'm sure you're following this intimately. You're a very political guy. I'm going to give you a chance to say whatever is on your mind right now.
What's on my mind about the election? As a Green, I've been looking at the overall picture of what's working for Southern California and how that federal, state, local conversation. So, and in the face of the Bush administration, that's really what we as local activists have to do, because the federal government is so not there for us, nor can they be for us. And so that's where my activism, and as a journalist and someone who's like on the street kind of working with people, it's just that. It's like I'm telling people, you know, we're not going to fix the feds. George Bush has shown us how, shall we say, unstable the system is. And so as Californians and as like people from San Diego County, it's up to us to like look after ourselves.
I know you believe that these national issues have consequence, real life consequences for even people in this community. So let's start with that one though. How do we deal with some of these national things?
Well, the first way we deal with the national thing is we do not elect Brian Bilbray to the 50th district. The man in his first week of office voted for oil drilling off the coast of Southern California, and tourism, especially at the loss of all of our agriculture due to overpopulation, tourism is our bread and butter. And then here, this newly elected lobbyist, yada yada, I mean, don't even get me started on Bilbray's record, but then his new record, only in office in a week, was to put oil rigs off the coast of California, to decrease funding for Amtrak, to make Iraq a permanent part of the Bush Jihad's war on terror, whatever that means. So here's this man who's a lobbyist for SDG&E. Again, his whole list goes down to FAIR, these pseudo anti-immigrationists. I mean, it's just crazy right now. So these I like to call them the federal monkeys, and they're playing all these weird games, and what they do is it undermines our sense of well-being. Because for the longest time we thought Washington had our back on no more oil drilling off the California coast. We just learned that's not only not true, we are now delusional and not fighting harder just to make sure that could never come back. So that's how the federal will now shape local politics. Because here in San Diego County, there's a new look to politics, and it's going to start to emanate as everybody starts fighting the federal government, literally fighting the federal government against any future oil drilling off the San Diego coast. It's going to get ugly. If I wanted to shift that out there, so here in San Diego, we have our own pit issues, overpopulation, traffic gridlock, water quality, air quality, and those are our local issues, but those are national issues, and how every community deals with those ecological conversations, because on just underneath the ecological conversations is the economic conversation. Oddly enough, it should be the other way around. We're too busy looking at the economics. We've ignored the environment. And as that gets shifted on its head, where we're forced to deal with environmental issues, and that's going to be because economically we're like, yikes, you know, global warming, what the insurance companies are doing. That's just, again, tips of the iceberg that we don't even have. I should say we haven't even begun to understand, because I can just imagine what the people in Kansas are going through looking at another winter. You know, I live in Southern California. I don't have those winters. People in Connecticut, they must be going crazy. New Orleans, you know, they dodged the bullet this year, but they're living in a hurricane zone, in a planet with rising oceans. That's scary. You know, and the people of New Orleans saw that the federal government was not there for them, nor will they be the next time. Southern Californians need to get that. People from Oregon need to get that. Texans totally need to get that. You know, so that's how this conversation is shaping. You know, everyone knows I'm a California secessionist. As a journalist, I put it in my columns all the time. You know, I think the federal government's gotten too big. And the farther we get into this where, you know, our needs aren't being met, whether you're a Montana rancher or you're a surfer down in Imperial Beach, the conversation is the federal government is not working for us. I mean, and I don't want to sound too strident, but it's that important.
Part of the challenge right now is the fact that the main issues that are confronting the populace that they're being forced to confront relate specifically to the war. And yet, the environmental issues are gaining in strength. Environmentalism is finally back on the table. People are actually talking about it, they're thinking about it, they're feeling it. But it hasn't really acquired any real critical mass. I was appalled, for example, that in the 2004 election with Kerry, he didn't even mention the environment. He hardly mentioned it at all. And again, even in this particular election, it's hard to feel the sense of environmentalism. It's mentioned on occasion, but it seems as if there's other issues right now. When is this going to really start to make a difference?
That's a very valid point. But that's a failure of the environmentalist. That's a failure of the media. That we haven't, you know, connected the dots. Because the reality is, the anti-war movement is a pro-environment movement. From the very beginning, as a Green Party spokesperson, before the war even started, we were there downtown San Diego denouncing this as a war over natural resources. This isn't about Iraqi liberation. This isn't about anything other about getting at the natural resources. Americans need to get that this isn't a war about freedom. It's a war about, like, oil. It's a war about, like, taking other people's resources. And so, again, to be anti-war is to be pro-environment. And the media doesn't want to get you. Now, you ask yourself, well, why doesn't the media want that? Because remember, all media is owned by the corporations. Everybody in our government, from Hillary Clinton across, Barack Obama, all of them, they're corporatists. To be a senator, that means that the corporations have to support you. If they don't, you don't get to be senator. You know, to be a congressman needs to be, you already need to be bought and sold before you take office. Somebody has to own it. And that's the corporations. That's capitalism. That's industrialization. So industrialization don't want to talk about pollution and all the effects of that, because then we'd have to stop consuming as much. Americans consume way too much. Watch this Christmas. I ask all your viewers, watch television. And most environmentalists will tell you to kill your television. If you want to see how ugly the beast is, look with new eyes this holiday season at all the consumption they throw at you and your kids, and all those products they're selling you are oil-based, that's petroleum-based. So the Barbie you buy for your daughter this Christmas, that's dead kids in Iraq. Those are bombs in Iraq, is to make sure she has a Barbie under the Christmas tree. Americans need to face the reality. It's not just the oil that's going into the tanks. That's the medicine. Everything about hospitals are so reliant on petroleum. You know, our whole culture dies the minute we recognize that we've based it on a failing resource. So then you have to look at this idea of capitalism. It's like fool's progress. Because we're literally using a resource up, and we've done nothing to make sure that we can actually make the shift. Those are the things we need to look at. So no, the war in Iraq is not a war on terror. It's a war on the planet. It's a war on human sense of entitlement and just avarice. Vandana Shiva and Avrahati Roy and all these wonderful women thinkers from India and stuff, they're telling us the next wars are going to be over water. I mean, these are the conversations. So this one is just a warm-up for the future coming resource wars of the 21st century. Defer. I mean, you know, all that kind of genocide that George Bush turns his back on while people are being butchered in Northern Africa. That's just crazy. But those are resource wars. It's not about religion. It's not about that. It's about overpopulation and who has access to the stuff.
Well, interestingly enough, of course, there's plenty of talk about clean tech, and people are talking about solar. They're talking about wind, et cetera, et cetera. But there's two big monkeys coming out of the box right now that are going to trump them a thousandfold. One is what is called clean coal, which some environmentalists seem to like. And then, of course, the one that people aren't prepared to talk about quite yet, but is going to be the mainstream thing, is nuclear. That's coming. People don't see it yet, but it will be here. And sometimes it seems as if we never really look at the real questions. For example, with clean coal, great concept, except that the hills of West Virginia are being taken out, absolutely taken out. So we, you know, somehow environmentalists have got to take a stand. There has to be some balancing act here, and we have to take a stand for what is really right, which is going to be truly clean technologies.
Well, and it's not just clean technologies. I've been saying often it's about getting more from less, right? Less people. It's less people using less resources more wisely. So whether it's clean coal, yes, we don't want mountain, you know, top mining, right? We just need to consume less. You know, it's about voluntary simplicity, deep ecology. These are the conversations that are coming. And again, it's about population reduction. And again, a lot of people say, oh, you want to kill people? It's like, no, we want to educate people to say, you know what, don't have that third child. Hell, don't have that second child right now. Personally, as a non-breeder and a member of the Green Party, I just think of anyone who's like thinking about having children right now is being incredibly selfish, because we're leading into a world that is not going to be very child-friendly in the short term. It's just not. It's not child-friendly now if you look at the number of kids living on the streets of America. Look at the children in Darfur. Madonna adopting the little baby whose father had to abandon him in an orphanage just because he couldn't support this child on the most meager of lifestyles. I mean, that's our world of the 21st century, where, you know, one kid out of hundreds of thousands of Malawi children, you know, gets the lottery. That's our world now. And again, and I keep telling a lot of the activists here in San Diego, maybe because we don't have the open space. I was just up in Mendocino, and there's so much open space in parts of California, it just boggled my mind. And then the closer I got to home, the more dense, the more people, the more traffic, the more pollution, the more noise. And it's a population thing, you know. Again, all of California, America would be a gorgeous place if we just learned to live within our means and don't think that quantity is easily replaced by quality. It's just not. You know, the more you have, the less you have, right? And I think, you know, think of it. Once upon a time when you had 20 kids in a classroom, that was a good place to learn. Now you got 35. That's overpopulation. And we clamor about we don't have enough funding for our schools. Right? But no one ever thinks, maybe we just make less babies. Here in California, everybody's wringing their hands about illegal immigration. Again, as a secessionist, I think it'd be better for California school kids if we stop interstate immigration. We don't need any more people from Arizona or Nevada or Indiana, because those people, when they come here, they're taking the good jobs. You know, because Californians aren't picking their own vegetables, and they haven't for years, right? But we are taking the good jobs. But if kids are coming from Iowa, or we let other people move here to take the really good jobs, who are we serving? Again, this is a green conversation about decentralization. I'm an honest believer that the Federation has not served the people. It's not serving the planet, and that's the problem. America is too big for its own good. And just like the Soviet Union broke apart, right, and now we can see what kind of ecological legacy was left by that type of industrialization. And once our federal government starts to break apart and that we start to see the ugly seams of mass consumption and commercialism and industrialization, we're going to start to see some really ugly scars that the EPA has been, like, you know, covering over for years. You know, we'll start to see, because I keep telling people, a bunch of my readers come to me all the time, and I have to keep pointing out to them, communism and capitalism are two sides of the same coin, and they're both the, you know, it's the commodity of industrialization. You know, it's all about industrialization. No matter how you paint the pig, industrialization is killing our planet. The global warming as we're currently experiencing it is because of human industrialization, not volcanoes. And yes, volcano-induced global warming has happened in the past, but we're not talking about that. We're talking monkeys who drive, mucking up the works, you know. And so, is that being addressed in this election? No. Was it addressed in the last election? No. Or the one before that? No. But what's going to happen, eventually the Greens, because we've been here and saying the same thing as long, eventually we're going to be seen as right, even though we've been right for the last 30 years, clamoring about, you know, like the modern-day Cassandras, you know? And that's the conversation. We're all, your show is a perfect example of a voice, one voice in the wilderness. Right, my column in a different medium, you know, little tiny voices everywhere just trying, none of them are coming together because the mainstream is trying to, like, stop the messengers from coming together. And when they do, then we just denounce them and call them the BBC, and everybody's like, they're just the BBC, you know. We should all be as, like, shall we say, intelligent and forward-thinking as the journalists with the BBC right now. And is that a plug? They're not paying me. But I just read them. When I want really good press, I go to England to read all their newspapers because I can't trust the American press. And I'm a journalist in America. I can't even trust my stuff not to be censored.
Robert Nanninga is ramping up to the finish, which we'll get to following this short break.
Just when you feel like you're out on your own, just look.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Sometimes we put into words the dreams and aspirations that stir us. And when we sense the greatness falter, it is those words and song that often rekindles a belief that there are some things worth talking about. Our conversation with Robert Nanninga continues.
Well, here's the thing, Robert. I really appreciate your perspective, and I know you everything you say, you're saying from the deepest recesses of your soul, and I give you a lot of respect for that. And some people will call you a dreamer,
but
and
I'm
they're
not
gonna,
the only one.
But you're not the only one. That's right. And I guess if I were to Because I don't think it's... I think some of the things...
But Sydney, I'm not a dreamer. I'm a pessimist, man. And I have no hope. I mean, and even in my activism, and a lot of us, is because we don't have hope for this system. This is a dead system. This paradigm is dead. And as soon as the people get it, then we can move on to what's going to work. But this is a failed paradigm, and we're hurtling to our own demise. We could easily just kind of turn off the key and step out of the automobile. But instead, we're like, I'm not going to hit the wall. I'm not going to hit the wall. I'm not going to hit the wall. We, as Western civilization, are about to hit the wall. So, no, I'm not a dreamer. I'm an angry monkey who's trying to save room for giraffes and coyotes and the occasional gnatcatcher.
Perhaps you're a survivalist. I think you care about your own survival, as we should care about the survival of all of the system.
My ecosystem is Northern San Diego County, and I can't tell the people of France how to live their lives. I could tell them ways that would help make our lives better, but here in Southern California, we don't have any right to tell other people how to live because we are so out of balance with the environment. Southern California, we need to deal with our own stuff. The people in LA need to deal with their own stuff. And so that whole federation thing is a way of taking the power away from the people. When we came together, it was a federation of states. It was a scary big continent, right? And we needed that federation just to protect what little bit they had. We've gone full circle, and it's that very federation that's taking the power away from the people because we've gotten too big, and so now one voice in the wilderness now is not a person in the woods. It's somebody sitting in a townhouse in downtown San Diego with no sense of accomplishment or a voice to change to make their life better. And whether you're in Kansas, you're in Miami, anywhere in the United States, people are having that sense they no longer belong or they don't make a difference. And that's what's going to kill the American dream, not some one corrupt politician, the currently one totally included there. That's my bush bash. I should do that at least once every 30 minutes or my hair turns blue.
Well, the irony of what you've just stated is the fact that you're talking about, it's getting back to some kind of on-the-ground politics, is the fact that you're really talking about a Republican administration, supposedly Republican administration. They have been historically the champions of states' rights, keeping federalism small. What is happening?
The corporatist. It's the corporatist. Here in San Diego, there's a true understanding of, we call them the coastal Republicans. Those are people that want clean air, and they want clean water, and they want their daughters to have the right to choose, because these are intelligent, educated people. Right? But then they have economic issues that are different than a Green or a Democrat or a little bit more, lesser taxes, all pro-business, yada, yada, yada. But they still want clean air. They know what clean air does for local business. They know the importance of clean water to a surfing community. You know, these conversations. So, you know, taking care of the environment is very Republican. People in the White House right now, these are corporate jihadists. They're warmongered neocons. And enough people in the media just don't call it like it is. Because if George Bush was doing what he was doing in Venezuela, we'd go, oh, El Presidente Bush, he's bad, right? But he's in our country, and he's like, he's a hero. But he's one of the biggest dictators that's been out there in civil liberties. And again, that's not even my racket. There are other activists that are much better up and much better skilled talking about the erosion of our civil liberties. I am the tree hugger guy. I'm the crazy man screaming in the wilderness about suburbanization and how we're killing our children by everything we do wrong. You know, we drive our kids to school in big SUVs when the best thing we could do to them is tell them to walk to school. Because not only is it a good exercise, then they see where they live. You know, kids are being taken off the planet and put in little boxes and plugged in. And where will be the future environmentalists come from? I mean, the Matrix, that whole weirdness of the Matrix. I mean, that kind of hits home when you have all these little kids in their little cubicles in front of a computer. Same thing, just plugged in. And these are the conversations that there's a revolution coming, and either we're going to be ahead of it or you're going to be underneath it. Because it just has to. Every civilization has it. Ours is coming. And I'm hoping it's going to be environmentally motivated when people start demanding equality in regards to proper. When we say property rights, we should also be talking about air. We should be talking about water. We should be talking trees. You know, those kind of things. Not necessarily like, if I have a right to build a hotel, how about I have the right to breathe clean air? Those are the issues that we're not addressing because the industrialization and the corporatists and the lawyers and all that stuff is all about the economics and nothing about the environment. And that's going to kill us. Look at the fur. Look at Easter Island. You know, we can just go on for hours showing failed social experiments where people didn't learn to live within the balance with the environment in which they chose to live in. Because some species can't leave their habitats, right? We can move everywhere, and we have. That's part of the problem with the planet, because humans have felt like entitled to live wherever they want, regardless of the impact, or take off the top of mountains in West Virginia, or fill in wetlands, or chop down trees. Like, oh, they're ours. But again, so when this revolution comes, is we'll start to elect true environmentalists, you know? And we will elect real women for women's rights. I was talking to someone yesterday. Someone's saying, well, Bob, who would you do for a Veterans Affair? And I'm like, this woman who's running in Ohio, I think, Tammy Duckworth, the pilot who lost both of her legs, right? She should be the director of Veterans Affair. A young woman fresh from the battlefield. She'll know what the veterans need, not some 80-year-old man who never, ever served. You know what I'm saying? This our government is at right now. We get people who are so unqualified. You did a heck of a job, Brownie, sort of thing, right? Those are the people we put in place instead of the people who know. Are there environmentalists? Are there biologists, oceanographers in the Interior Department? No. You know, they're corporate stooges. They're not the same people that can talk biology. They can talk, like, quarterly forecasts. We need biologists, geologists, you know, climatologists. Those are the people we now need at the height of the federal government. I mean, literally, it would be great if we had a biologist, an anthropologist sitting in the White House would probably be a good thing right now, because someone needs to learn from the past mistakes, because this guy, all he does, keeps making them and then waving the flag, like somehow that's going to make a difference.
Well, it's my belief that the Greens, for example, have been around for about, 30 years, something like that, about 30 years, as a party, and have been ridiculed and pilloried as dangerous and communists and things of that nature. I believe that they're the voices from the wilderness who are proclaiming what America could be like again. It's a reclaiming of this country. It's a taking back and a restoration of real American values, which have to do with individual freedoms in a miraculous environment. Because if we don't do that, this country is changing in ways that there was a. Today I just read about the fact that there was a kind of a quasi-secret signing in the White House by the president of a law which now allows him to use his own discretion as the decider as to when to call out the army against insurrections in the United States, otherwise known as potentially popular uprisings
right.
against. And you know, this is, from my perspective when I grew up, that was kind of the vision that I had of communism. You know,
right.
where there was no true liberty, there was no true sacred freedom, individual freedom, the government was into everything, and if you didn't walk straight, you'd better watch out.
And then you became an enemy of the state if you disagreed. Now, we're having the same thing. Notice that right after Bush was reelected, and I use that term very loosely considering what went down in Ohio, that they did a new push, and the FBI just started getting all vocal about going after eco-terrorists, right? They have the nerve to say we're going to track down eco-terrorists when it's the Bush administration that is dropping depleted uranium bombs all over Iraq and Iran. Yet they call people trying to save trees and rabbits eco-terrorists while they're dropping depleted uranium on sovereign nations. See, it's that kind of Orwellian thing that we're up against. So you can come to the party totally prepared, but when you got idiots in charge, you got nothing.
It's always good to talk with Bob Nanenga. He's a man, from the first moment I saw him, who was red-faced with passion. And he still is. And he has a lot to say and a lot of really deep concerns. And some people may agree and some people may disagree, but I will always respect your right to do so.
Yes. So, read Observations from the Edge. You can go online, just Google me. I'd love to say that. You just say that in public. Google me, baby. So, Google me at Observations from the Edge or just Robert Nanenga. So, I write for the Coast News and other things. So, this is a conversation I've been in for about 12 years now. And it's fresh and it's in your face. And I get paid. So, woohoo! Capitalism rules.
The countdown to your future has begun. For many of us, it is reaching a point where the choices that democracy provides don't feel like choices at all. And yet, these are the choices we still have to make. Choose wisely. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again next Thursday or any time on the archives when your Voice of the Earth returns here on the Wild Side News.